one and the only
suitcase entrepreneur. Natalie Sisson, I sell freedom.
Welcome to the Smart Brand Marketing Podcast with your host, Tom the Digital Architect Liebel. Are you tired of spending money on marketing efforts that produce little or no results? Unable to decide whether internet marketing is right for your business? Want to take your brand to the next level but are unsure of what steps to take next? Hey, you're not alone. Join thousands of others in their pursuit of growing a profitable business and learning actionable strategies on how they can outperform brands that are older, bigger, and stronger.
Hey, listener, it's Wednesday morning, and you are listening to session number 5 of the Smart Brand Marketing Podcast. Natalie Sisson is here to explain how someone can build a personal brand from scratch and do it the right way. This is a weekly podcast, so if you haven't subscribed yet, do it now. Why don't you tell everyone who you are and what you do?
Great question. So my name's Natalie Sisson. I'm a suitcase entrepreneur, and I sell freedom. So basically, I have lived in my suitcase for the last 4 years, running my business from a laptop and a mobile, making money and making an impact from teaching others how to do the same. So build a profitable online business and either travel the world or build a lifestyle that they really love.
I like that. I like that selling freedom part, too.
I thought about putting it on my homepage. Hi, I'm Natalie Sisson. I sell freedom. Want some? But maybe it wouldn't go down so well.
I don't think it would, just because when people say freedom, they mean like 50 different things, at least.
That's very true.
Some people think freedom to them is just being able to watch TV whenever they feel like. And I don't think you're selling that.
I don't actually watch TV, so no, that wouldn't be.
Especially with the regular working class, when they talk to me about things like this, they have a completely different idea. Like, you know, getting 3 weeks of vacation is freedom to them.
Yeah, that's true. But I do talk about that a lot too. Like yesterday I just ran a workshop, and during it, I was talking about why you need to get really clear on your vision of what you want for business and life. And that is the fundamental overarching factor. I know most people don't want to travel the world and live in a suitcase, but they want the ability to be able to drop a hat and just jump wherever they want to go, or just take a Friday afternoon off, or as you say, just sit in a hammock, read a book, watch some TV, and not feel guilty that they're having to achieve something, or that they're losing out on something, or that they're not making enough money, or that their boss tells them they've got to get back to work. So that's really what freedom is. It's living life on your own terms.
But from your experience, is it people really asking to have that type of freedom, or are they just like talking about the freedom to travel? Because there's a difference.
That's why I made that caveat. I think people love the idea of it, but they're not willing to put in the effort, the hard work, or get really clear on what it is that they want. So they like the concept of it, but there's very few people who will actually make the effort to go, no, I really want to live this life. Like, this is really important to me. So I'm going to do everything in my power to make it happen.
Can you describe your type of travel, how you live normally?
Yeah, it's changed a lot, actually. So I think when I started, I was like the backpacking traveler. I'd read all the Lonely Planet guides. I'd go where every other Lonely Planet person went. Like, you can't help it because you're doing all the things that they suggest. And I would just connect up with travelers on the road, and we'd travel together. And I was working at the time in a real corporate job. So I'd quit a job, go off for 2 or 3 months until my money ran out, or until I was sort of tired of it. And then I'd come back and I'd work again and do it all over. So I had, you know, a timeline within which to travel. I'd try and cover a continent, or, you know, go to South America or Europe. And these days it's changed a lot. I very rarely research anything. I just like to arrive. I stay in better accommodation. I treat myself to hotels, to Airbnb. I will spend money on stuff that I enjoy and experiences, and for sure still budget sometimes, but generally I'm just there to take in the culture and discover and see what happens. And also it's mixed in with business and pleasure. So I'll make contact with other entrepreneurs. I'll go to meetups. I'll run a workshop while I'm traveling through Japan. So it's quite different, actually. It's a totally different style, and I really like it. It's more about connections and experiences.
How many years have you traveled for?
I think my first trip was when I was 2.
Well, full time.
Oh, 4 years. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, that's a stretch of time, yeah. The main topic I really wanted to go over with you is engagement with the audience. This is something that's just so key these days for every type of business, even if you're just a mom and pop shop. People are confused about the type of tools they should be using and how they should be using them. And what's that even mean to engage with an audience?
The biggest piece of advice I can give people is to be authentically you. And I know that word authentic gets bandied around a lot, but like passion, but it's just being yourself. Like, all these social media tools and online tools that allow us to communicate around the world and be everywhere. They have also at the same time kind of made people realize, heck, you know, like I'm very on show, I'm very public now, I better watch what I say, or I better put on a positive front, or maybe I should look like I know what I'm doing. And I think all these things you can be mindful of, but people sort of forget that they just need to be who they are. You know, if you have an opinion like you always do, Tom, just state it. If you like to swear, swear. If you're funny, be humorous. Whatever it is, just be true to being you, because that's what people resonate with. That's why people love the Peter Shankmans of this world, or why they resonate with me, is because I'm like, hey, here I am. I'm this girl. I head out around the world. I do handstands. I run a really successful business. I have a ton of fun. I go on adventures. I don't always get it right. Sometimes I forget about visas. Sometimes I almost get arrested at airports. I don't have a perfect grammar. Community can pick that up, but I'm sure as hell going to show you how to live life to the full, right? And people either admire that and go, yeah, I want to be part of that. Or they're like, ah, you know, that seems a little crazy for me. I'm not into that. But by being who you are truly and authentically and putting it out there every day, you genuinely attract and engage with like-minded people who want to be part of your tribe.
Yeah, and I think it's really hard for people to understand what authentic is. And the way I usually like to say it is, a lot of us, when we go into, I guess, the public, we like to show people that we're perfect, we don't make mistakes. But it's the mistakes that people connect with.
Absolutely.
So by hiding that part, you're actually stopping people from connecting with you.
Yeah, it's that perfectionism thing, right? You need to let go of that. Some of my best posts, videos, podcasts have been when I've been really vulnerable and said, you know what, here's what I screwed up on recently, and here's what I'd like you to avoid or not do yourself, or here are the lessons that I learned, and here's what I really took away from it and why it was so valuable.
What would you recommend for someone that hasn't really engaged online in any way when they were starting out? What should they do? What's the first step?
I would suggest that they pick a site that really resonates with them. So it may be Facebook, it may be Twitter, it may be Google+. And I would suggest that they just pick one initially and they just look at what other people are doing on it, what they're talking about, what resonates with them, what they want to engage in and comment in, and then start doing that themselves. I think everybody knows that the key to engagement is to ask interesting questions, post interesting facts, share useful resources, get people's opinions. I think I would just test one platform initially and see how comfortable you feel with it, what the interaction's like, the kind of people that you're connecting with. Because, you know, I adore Twitter, but Twitter is like a high speed, fast stream, short facts. I like it because of its brevity. I like that you can pick up lots of stuff in very short factual time, and there's a stream of information coming in. That's the kind of personality that I have. Facebook I love more for connecting and engaging with friends and seeing who got married and where they're traveling and who got a job and all these wonderful things, and getting great comments on questions that I ask or opinions that I put out. And then I love Google+ because I feel it's a more intelligent and savvy audience right now. It hasn't quite become a sales pitch or fest. And so you get really interesting things shared, good comments, good interaction, more debates and discussions. Essentially just kind of start out and look at the key tools and which one relates to you and which one suits your personality and that you feel most at home with and comfortable with, and start from there and just do what Oscar Wilde said, be yourself because everybody else is taken.
Yeah, because what I see people do for the most part, when I say people, it's mostly businesses. They will get a Facebook page. They'll hire a company to buy likes from because, you know, they want to show off that they have 1,000 fans.
That drives me nuts.
but that's what they do. And they'll post pictures of, look what I did, how great we are. You know, so like a fencing company will show off like, oh, we built another fence. And that's the whole Facebook strategy. And it doesn't work.
Of course it doesn't work. That's like sitting down at a coffee shop with your friend and selling to them and not actually treating them as a person, engaging with them and asking how they are, and before you jump in and say, would you like a fence built? In fact, you're putting up a fence, you're putting up a barrier just by doing that. So I do see a lot of businesses do that. And you know what, Tom? I totally get it as well. Like when you first get online, especially if you have a business, you want to use these tools to sell, 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 because often you need the money or you're just trying to drum up business. But you don't realize that you have to provide a massive amount of value, of sharing, of just being helpful and ridiculously useful to people, and that will actually attract clients who are like, you know what, this person's always online, they're always answering my questions, they're sharing great links. You know, what do they do? Shoot, they build fences. Oh, I need one done. I'm going to go and hire them because they've always been consistently useful, friendly, approachable, and helpful. And that stuff takes time, and I think that's why businesses do it wrong, because they just want instantaneous results. They want the likes because the likes make them look popular, even if there's zero engagement, and they just want to sell because that's all they know. They're not willing to take the time to build the relationships. I'm going to harp back to my workshop. I don't just go, by the way, I'm holding a workshop in London in May, come along. You know, I'd share somebody else's opinion on it, not mine. So it's much more genuine.
So how long should someone wait before they feel like this is or isn't working when they start doing it?
That's a good question, actually. I mean, I've been on Facebook since 2006, and I used it personally initially. You know, I'd tag people and poke people.
Oh, you do.
Back in the days when you did that. What's that?
You do. I know you do that.
Tag people, poke. I don't poke at all. I don't even know what that feature is for anymore. But yeah, I'll tag people in photos for sure. But now I use it as a personal and professional. So you need to give something at least 3 to 6 months, if not longer, because you don't just jump on something and instantly make friends and suddenly become a superstar. Good things take time. And you can buy stuff, but I wouldn't recommend it. I mean, strategic Facebook advertising to build an engaged audience and posts and likes is fine, but just buying popularity, it will never, ever work. It's all about putting time and effort into the relationships and being specific about the relationships that you want to put that energy into.
When people go online, for some weird reason, they stop thinking about the people online as people and building their relationships. They just feel like it's a way where they're going to get these robots to buy from them. And they stop thinking about, like, there's an actual person on the other side of that computer.
Exactly. Yeah, we were talking about this yesterday when people leave reviews or harsh comments or just really nasty feedback. And I'm like, would you have said that to my face? No, you wouldn't have. So why would you do that online? Reputations are being built and taken down online in an instant. And I don't think that's fair. And I think people need to be really mindful of every single thing that they're putting out online is going to be there forever. So your entire online audit or trail is going to be there forever. So be really mindful about the person that you are and how you're coming across.
It's like Big Brother watching.
Yeah.
What do you do daily to engage with your audience?
I have narrowed it down to the key kind of platforms that I love to be on because I know that's where my audience are. Facebook is my number one driver of traffic, my personal profile and my page, followed by Twitter, and actually then followed by Google+, and Pinterest and YouTube are on there. So pretty much those tools are the key ones that I engage on. And I share different messages. So once a week, my podcast goes out on a Monday, and Thursday, my video goes out. So the rest of my week is really around sharing that information again, but in a useful way. So if they hadn't seen it, how can I entice them to come across and interact, to comment, to listen, to watch? And when I'm not talking about those things, I'll be sharing like a useful tip, maybe an inspirational quote, maybe a travel picture of the week, just stuff that I know my audience and my community and also my friends are going to find useful. So I jump on 2 or 3 times a day and just interact. I'll engage with people who've commented, who talked to me, who said something. I'll look at other people's profiles that I follow, that I like, and I'll engage there. I just try to keep my time minimized to the right things, which is mainly about being useful, being available, being helpful, being inspiring, whatever it may be, and connecting.
What do you think works best, content, video, or podcasts?
Well, it's all a form of content, isn't it?
But it's different ways of putting that content out. So which one do you think is most effective?
It is. So you mean written listening or video?
Yeah.
Great question. Whatever's most effective to the person who's consuming it. And I know that seems like an odd answer, but for example, I still like to read and I love podcasts. That said, I know some people just like my videos because they're short and sweet and useful and they can get a ton out of it in a short time. My podcast has become ridiculously popular because people love to just have me in their ear for half an hour each day. And some people hate reading online. So I actually hit all three. I offer 3 forms of those content every single month on my site to cater to the people. And it totally depends on which way people consume it. I still think there's power in the written word, for sure. And the great thing about what we do, Tom, is that you can take this podcast, you could have it transcribed, you could turn it into a book, it could be a bestseller, you never know. We could have done it as a video and then you could have stripped the audio and we could have had content. So I'm really just starting to see the power in having all forms of content, seeing which ones your audience are reacting to, and then multi-purposing that content to have it in different forms or pulling out the nuggets of wisdom in it and turning it into something else that they can have in another form.
And I think that's brilliant.
So do I, man. And it's just so handy. Like when you think about how much content you produce, you could go back to old blog posts and read them out as an audio and then make that an audio book. You know, there's just so many different things that you can do. And often it's been my community who've said, I love that podcast so much. Could you turn it into a guide? And I'm like, great idea. Just always thinking creatively about how can you make this content timeless.
How do you measure engagement?
I actually measure it in a number of ways. So there's obviously the factual hard data from Google Analytics where I can see which content is getting the most engagement, has been the most popular, which keywords, you know, what's really resonating. Of course, you can also tell from the number of the social shares, although those plugins can screw up from time to time, or comments that you're getting, likes, shares, etc. And just the number of feedback that I get through email or messages of people going, I really loved that recent webinar video, for example. So the tangible and the intangible. You can just kind of see how many people are referring you, how many maybe more sales you made as a result of that, how many more visitors you got to your site, how many people sign up to your subscriber list. So I have a pretty key analytics kind of measurement, but I also like the intangible, just the like, how is that resonating?
That's really good.
Yeah, I think a lot of people overlook that. They miss one or the other. They're like, oh, you know, I got 50 likes, but I'm like, yeah, but how many of those likes actually took an action and came across and did something like signed up, subscribed, became your client? And then there's also people who just don't track any metrics. So they're like doing all the stuff online and trying to communicate and engage, but they have no idea where their efforts are going. Both of those things seem silly. So you've got to track it.
A lot of people are doing like 100 different things, but not tracking anything. They're getting some results, but they don't know where it's coming from. What do you think could be an easy win on social media that people are just missing out on?
Having a social media strategy for a weekly update. So, and if I narrow this down even further, it's, you know, not necessarily what content you post each day, but of the content that you're posting, how many of those interactions are leading people back to join your thing, become a member of your group, whatever it may be. So I think people are missing the easy option to link back to a specific landing page where that you can engage further and actually get somebody to opt in or buy into what you're doing.
So it's sort of like reverse engineering. Can you give a like a specific example? Let's say someone is selling a course online, right? And it's music or something course. Let's say it's just a course. They have a website. How do you go back and make sure that you're doing the right things to get people going straight to that?
So I would be posting, if it's, especially if it's music, I'd be posting a video maybe that I just released, if I'm into videos, on how I created this piece of music. And in that video link, I would have, by the way, did you know that I have this program that is designed to get you from A to B with learning music, et cetera, more regularly or easily? Here's the link. Come across and check it out. On the video, I'd also have a click to action to, did you know that there's this great program? If you want to further your learning, check it out. In a blog post that I'd write where I'd embed the video, I'd also have more of a write-up about the program and get another link to that. When I share that video then, or that blog post on social media, I'm not talking about the program per se, but I'm saying, here's what you'll learn in this video, et cetera, et cetera. So it's like a soft sell. So you can see there how many paths are leading to that program, but all of them are after you've already given free value and information.
I like that. I think that's gold. First tier, I guess, would be selling the course. The second tier, I guess, selling the actual video that's selling the course. And then maybe the third tier is getting people to see the comment about the video and just kind of work back from there.
Yeah. And the other thing you could do, you know, if you're not into videos, you could do a webinar. And the webinar is just tons of free value for like 45 minutes, and at the end of that you're talking more about how you can further your learning by doing this program or this course. Or you can just send people to a free video webinar page so they can watch the replay. There's no obligation there. They get a ton of value from you. At the end of that, they can buy as well. So there's a number of ways, I think, of what I would say soft selling that's actually way more effective than the buy this now, because they've already consumed a ton of your content. They can see how valuable it is, and they're just ready to buy. I mean, that's how people usually come to me. 90% of what I do is free. And as a result of that, people then want to buy because they already have consumed the great stuff and they know there's extra goodness in going that step further. That's what I'd like to think. That's what they tell me.
That's probably right. Biggest problem people see with webinars is how to get the audience. If you're a small business owner that's not really good on the online, just on any other social media, they might have a Facebook page with like 20 friends on it. And if they do a webinar, you know, it's like, where do I start? Where do I get an audience for it?
So that's a great question, because there are so many ways. So first off, those people are probably just thinking, oh, well, how do I get that audience? When there's a whole audience out there who would probably be willing to share their audience with you. So if I had zero audience, if I had a list of 50, I had 20 likes on my page, I would enlist in a couple of ways here. One, I would reach out with a personal message on Facebook to some friends that I knew already had an existing audience or group of friends who would be interested in what I was talking about on my webinar. I would ask them if they would share that link with their friends either on their wall, on their page, or if they'd even potentially email their list and put it as a, you know, by the way, my friend's running this webinar, here are three benefits you're going to get from going. You can either do that as an affiliate, or you can just ask them to be a friend and share that. The second one that I just came onto is affiliates. So you don't have to have an affiliate program in place, but you could reach out to an influencer online or somebody that you've been connecting with who's in a similar industry, doesn't have this product or program that you're going to be offering in your webinar, but has an engaged audience, and say, would you mind sharing this link? Could I guest post on your site? Could you email about it? And in return, I'll give you a commission for anybody who signs up. Third thing you could do is you could engage in some form of Facebook advertising, for example, if you were using Facebook, and actually driving converted leads to the webinar sign-up page. So you could invest, for example, $20 a day. You might get 20, 30, 40 new leads. And if one of those converts in your program is you know, $300 and you've really made out on that. Those are just like, if I was starting from absolute scratch, those would be things that I'd consider.
You just dropped a mini course that could probably be sold for like $900 or something. And then people probably sell less info for more. So what I would tell the listener to do right now is to rewind this and go over it at least 10 more times with a pencil and paper. Seriously, to write some of this stuff down. Because seriously, if people start and do that, they can build a whole business online from it.
Totally. But thank you. I'm happy to charge $900 for it. They could just buy my book.
Yeah, but I've seen things that had less value selling for more. That's what I'm trying to say. I can imagine someone driving right now being like, what just happened?
Hopefully they're still driving on the road. They just didn't career off into a lorry or something.
And I don't think you really took many breaths in it too. I think you just kind of went like, and it just went for like 3 minutes. If you were starting out today and needed to make a living online fast, what would you do?
Quickest path to revenue if you've just been fired or you want to travel the world or do whatever is putting out a service, because obviously launching a product and building up a reputation that way, it's going to take quite a lot of time. Product launches are, even if you wrote a book in a weekend and tried to put it out, it's still quite a lot of time. Whereas putting up a page talking about how people can buy a service from you, whether that's, and I'm talking about coaching, consulting, training, some form of skill or knowledge that you have that you can put out there that somebody would find valuable. So you might be great at copywriting. You might be good at just figuring out the tech side of stuff. Maybe you're not an expert in that. Maybe you've never sold that before, but if you can help somebody with their WordPress issue, they're willing to pay you for that. So I think the fastest way is to be able to offer a service of some kind where you're either exchanging your value and your knowledge or a skill that you have. And a lot of people will say to me, well, I don't really have that many skills, but I'm like, every single day you're doing something that somebody else could use, right? And often the things that come naturally to you and you're really good at, you don't take a lot of stock of those. You're kind of like, but they just come naturally to me. Whereas somebody, you might be great at introducing people to other people. And for somebody else who's an introvert or whatever, that may be ridiculously hard. So they might pay you to teach them some confidence skills or better ways to network. Or you might be great at cooking French meals for your friends and you hold dinner parties all the time and you love it. And people are like, can you teach me how to do that? And you're like, ah, it's just easy. You know, why would you want me to do that? But they actually want you to step up and teach them. And so you could start initially by doing cooking classes, right? But then if you want to go on the road, you could turn that into, you could video some of these cooking classes, you could turn that into an online program, learn from home, you could start a cookbook, you could start speaking. I mean, the world's your oyster, but it's just about getting really clear on what your sweet spot is, that intersection between what you're really good at, what you enjoy doing, and what people will pay you for. And the what people will pay you for is the trickier part. So it's like, whose problem can I solve with what I already know and I'm good at?
Yeah, and I think I'll probably have to do a whole different podcast just on that, because it's it's a really tough one. And I know there are methods and ways of getting that vision, but that's going to take another 30 or 40 minutes just to go over.
An extra $900.
So Natalie, tell people, tell people where they can find you, how they can reach you, and if you have anything that you're releasing or just promoting right now, this is your moment.
I would love for them. Oh, thank you. My moment. Da-da-da-da. I would love for them to come across to suitcaseentrepreneur.com. I know it's quite hard to spell entrepreneur, but even if you misspell it, you'll probably find me. I would love for them to sign up to my High Flyer. It's a free newsletter I send out once a week and they get a cool suitcase starter kit. So suitcaseentrepreneur.com is great. I'm the same on Facebook, facebook.com/suitcaseentrepreneur. I'm at Natalie Sisson on Twitter. Like wherever they want to engage with me, I'm kind of a social media whore. I'm everywhere because I love it, because I've built my business on it and I love connecting with people. But that's the main stuff from there. They'll probably find out what I'm doing, the workshops I'm running, the retreats that I have, and they can just look around and find out what freedom means to them.
Perfect. And I'll link out to most of these in the show notes.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it, please help out by leaving a review on iTunes and don't forget to hit the subscribe button. If you have any questions, hit me up in the comments on smartbrandmarketing.com. Until next time.
Thanks for listening to the Smart Brand Marketing Podcast with Tom, the Digital Architect Liebelt. For more tips, tricks, and interviews, come visit smartbrandmarketing.com. That's smartbrandmarketing.com. And join the newsletter. It's free.